Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
It's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
That's how I know.
This is Morning Air on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. It's Glenn along with Sarah. Sneaking in under the radar one more day. John will be back tomorrow, Lord willing. We're expecting that. And he'll have all kinds of tales from a great trip as well. Coming up this hour, our trip includes a stop and visit with Kim Morgan. She's a Catholic wife and mom, and she's also a longtime independent clinical social worker as well. Going to talk about some trends in mental health involving treatment through technology, some unique things we're dealing with today. We've got a story corner about how one patron made a restaurant cry. That's all on the way. But first, a little baseball talk with Sarah Tafoya. Sarah, how are you this morning?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking, Glenn. How was your weekend?
Hey, it was pretty good, pretty good. I know ours are both of ours were filled with some baseball, as a matter of fact, and you were able to get out there and take the little one along, the tiny one, when they're still easy on a baseball date. How did that go?
Oh, it went really well. Actually, she was our first time at the stadium here in Chicago, and so of course they have that ceremonial little pin that they give you, and you can get a little certificate with your name on it and everything. So my husband very proudly went up there to get all of that for little Lucy, and she didn't have any hot dogs or anything because she's too little for all of that, but she enjoyed watching us eat it in anticipation that she would be having a little flavor taste of that later when she had some milk. But yeah, and we had a great time, and she fell asleep a couple times. She fell asleep, but we had to get there really early because my husband's a big bobblehead collector, and it was a bobblehead game. So I had her in the carrier, and she fell asleep while we were waiting in line, and then fell asleep on her dad. So just adorably while we were watching the game. So it was a great time, and we were able to spend some quality time together and have some good conversations. And yeah, it was a good time. Thanks for asking about it.
Excellent. Hey, who was the bobblehead they were giving away?
It was one of the players, Yaz. I can't remember his last name because I'm not a great baseball fan like my husband. But yeah, no, they were giving away that bobblehead. And then the next day, actually, my husband went with his brother. So kind of had like a double date weekend for him. And they had a Santa Claus bobblehead that they were giving out because it's supposedly halfway to Christmas. But I'm pretty sure it's actually not because I think that's a different month. But that's when the Sox say, yeah, it's halfway to Christmas. We're giving out a Santa bobblehead. So it was good.
All right, that sounds great. That's gone. This is, you know, collectibles are such a big deal, and bobbleheads, depending how good the team is going, you know, in any particular major league park, sometimes folks will come just for the bobblehead and then get busy putting it on eBay before, the first pitch is thrown. But hopefully those Sox fans enjoyed those throughout the course of the game as well. The little one's sleep wasn't interrupted by a fall ball or a home run ball, anything like that?
We were not close enough to get any of that action. But, you know, it was kind of touch and go for a while because it was really a downpour earlier in the day, both Saturday and Sunday in the Chicagoland area. We weren't sure if the game was going to happen at all. So we got in, and we brought our umbrella, and we didn't even need it. So that was always good. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy there earlier in the day.
Oh, speaking of collectibles, you know, over the weekend, they inducted some new folks, seven of them, into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, including Mets manager, the amazing 69 Mets, World Series champs, Gil Hodges, and many more. David Ortiz, many know as a commentator and a great star for the Red Sox over time. He started his career with the Minnesota Twins. One of three folks who wore the Twins uniform out of the seven that got in over the weekend,
wow,
including pitcher who was also a Sox pitcher for a while, too, Jim Cott, a baseball announcer, as well as a 25-year player in the major leagues and Twins batting champ from back in the 60s, a couple of years, first guy ever to do it, his first 2 years in the league in 64 and 65, Tony Oliva. But as far as collectibles, my goodness, my wife has a baseball that she was given by David Ortiz years ago when he played for the Twins, and later on kind of a Twins promotional tour, Tony Oliva kind of continued to spend a ton of time after his career in Minnesota, and she got it autographed by Tony Oliva. So,
nice.
You know, suddenly we have this thing, handed to her by one Hall of Famer and signed by another one year years ago. And, you know, the best I can do, I think, is, you know, probably got a Jim Cotton, Tony Oliva baseball card from back in the day. So all kinds of cool things. But, hey, speaking of baseball, how about talking with the Cubs chaplain and someone who has done some great things here to talk about on the Feast of St. James, walking the Camino in Spain. Great to talk once again to the pastor of St. Isaac Jogues Parish in Hinsdale, Illinois. Father Burke Masters is with us this morning. Father Burke, great to talk to you again.
Great to be back on the air after a sabbatical. I just started, as you mentioned, here at St. Isaac Jogues on July 1st. Then prior to that, I was given a three-month sabbatical that we can have every 15 years. And I took advantage of that sabbatical and did the Camino de Santiago in Compostela, Spain, a 500-mile walk. And so today being the feast day of St. James, it's an important day for me because Santiago means St. James in Spanish, and St. James the Greater, the brother of John the Apostle, is buried in Santiago de Compostela in Spain. And for over 1,000 years, pilgrims have made this journey from different places to arrive at the tomb of St. James in Santiago, and had the opportunity to do that this summer. 34 days, 515 miles we walked. It was an incredible, life-changing experience.
Now, if we do the math on that, that's like, what, 15 miles a day? My goodness, how did you how did you handle that?
It is about 15 miles. We, you know, some days we did 10 or 11, some days we did 20, but yeah, it averaged about 15 miles a day. And your biggest fear are blisters and, you know, feet problems. And so people say, how do you train for that? You know, it was walking 6 to 8 hours a day. And we didn't take a day off. We were on a pretty strict schedule. I went with four friends, four laymen who are married, and then three other guys joined us for the last 2 weeks. And it was just an incredible experience. You know, we trained in different ways. And I was told, make sure you train on hills, because a part of the Camino is flat, but a part of it is going through the Pyrenees Mountains. And if you can train in some altitude, that's always helpful, which we don't have here in Illinois. So I actually went to New Mexico. I know many of you know Bishop Wall, who's the Bishop of Gallup, New Mexico. He's on Relevant Radio sometimes. Went out to train with him in the altitude of New Mexico, and that helped tremendously, getting through the Pyrenees. And I was fortunate. I had some minor blister issues, but nothing that kept me from walking. There are times when people have to give up the Camino because of blisters or foot problems.
That's just an amazing journey. How long ago did you decide that this is something I want to do at some point? And then how long before you decided, okay, we're doing it this year, we really need to start training?
Yeah, good question. So the movie The Way, which is what El Camino means in English, what came out, I think, in around 2010 or 11, 12, somewhere in that area. And it's with Martin Sheen, and it's about the Camino. It's about the way. And I remember when I heard about the movie, I didn't see it actually until a week before I went this summer, this spring. But I heard about it. And I thought, I started doing research and thought, wow, that's really interesting. And of course, being a former athlete, I love physical challenges. But then when I heard about the spiritual piece of, you know, arriving at the tomb of St. James, and I started reading about people saying this was, they often define their lives by before and after the Camino. I thought, wow, this is something that I want to do, but I didn't know when. It was just one of those things on my bucket list. And then when Bishop Hicks told me sometime last fall that he was going to make me a pastor, and I was working in the diocesan offices, and then he was going to make me a pastor July 1, I thought, well, this is a perfect time to take my sabbatical prior to going to the parish. And wow, when do you have 5 weeks to do something. It's probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. There are people who do pieces of the Camino, you know, over years. You know, they might take a week this year and a week next year and eventually add up to doing the full Camino. But I was really fortunate, and these other four friends who were able to get away for 5 weeks, it just gives that full 5 weeks gives you time to really unplug from our busy lives. And you spend time walking, talking, and praying, much like probably Jesus and his disciples did 2,000 years ago. And I think it's like, for me, it's been like a major reset button in my life to, you know, really unplug. I made daily videos from the Camino and put them on my YouTube channel so people could experience it with us. But for the most part, just really stayed unplugged and, just feel reinvigorated and renewed and ready for this new chapter in my life, being a pastor.
Father Burke Master is again with us here on Morning Air on Relevant Radio, talking about a great adventure walking the Camino in Spain. Now, Father, there are different routes and different lengths and different parts of the route. It sounds like you went a good portion of the whole distance, huh?
There are different ways. So we went it's called the Francés, the Camino Francés, which starts in St. John, France, in the Pyrenees. And you're only one day in France, actually, go over the Pyrenees. And then the last, 33 days were in Spain and northern Spain. But you can walk from anywhere, really. We met people who started walking right out of their house, in the middle of France. And so they were walking for almost a month before they ran into us, and they're going to walk another month. You can come from Portugal. You can come from different parts of Spain, from the south, from the north, from the coast. And so if you start doing research, you can see that there's many different ways. And that's because there have been some saints who have walked this journey. And it just you just feel connected to history, to, to this great journey. And I would say probably the biggest lesson I learned, because people ask me that question, We were probably, 2 or 3 weeks into the 5 week journey, and people set up, food stands along the way, whether it's juices or fruit that they sell, or actually just ask for donations. And so for some reason I had this taste for a smoothie, and I hadn't had one, the whole time. And so we came upon the stand, and by this time there were, it must have been the last 2 weeks because the other three friends had joined us by then. So I saw the fruit stand. I stopped. Two other guys stopped, and the rest of the group kept going. And I grabbed a banana, and the man who had opened the shop, he said, "I can make a smoothie for you." And of course, that got my attention. And I said, "Can you make one to go? Because the rest of our group is still walking." And he said, "Why are you in such a hurry?" And I said, "We're trying to stay together and keep going." And then he really stopped me. He said, "No, I'm serious." And he looked me in the eyes, and it was as if Jesus were speaking to me directly. He said, "Why are you in such a hurry?" And I thought, wow, I don't have an answer for that. And so I started to reflect, why am I in such a hurry? He said, "You're out here to enjoy this Camino, not to rush to get to the next place." And I started thinking in life how often I'm just waiting to get to the next thing and rushing through life rather than really enjoying the journey. And it changed everything for me, not only for the last 2 weeks of the Camino, but still just trying to soak in the moment, to live in the moment. And so that was one of the biggest takeaways for me.
Wow, that is, not necessarily just only an American thing, but kind of a Western thing, right? That we are in such a hurry, such a productive society in terms of trying to get a bunch of things done, getting great satisfaction out of you know, making a list and checking things off. Were you able to kind of take some of that slowing down for important things mindset and take that home with you?
Definitely. I'm trying to, you know, being a pastor, you know, I say getting back into our culture, things just naturally speed up and accelerate. But I'm really trying to, you know, kind of live that Camino. One of the common sayings that you hear hundreds of times a day as you meet people is buen camino, you know, good camino, have a good way, have a good day. And I try to remind myself throughout the day, don't get in a hurry, just enjoy the moment. There's always going to be many things coming our way, and it's so tempting just to get on that conveyor belt or treadmill and just spin the wheels, you know. And so I've tried to bring what I experienced there right back here. And so far I can say, so it was mid-May when I finished. So it's been 2 months, you know. Of course, I hope it lasts the rest of my lifetime, but so far so good.
Well, and Father, too, is it not just slowing down, but really being present in the moment, which we can use at any moment?
Yeah, when I read the lives of the saints, and I read this, you know, kind of, this came to me long before the Camino. One of the things that the saints have in common is the ability to live in the moment. And I tend to live in the future. I tend to think, okay, what's next? I have my list of things to do, and I'm just constantly checking things off the list. But the Camino and also, you know, spending time in adoration each day just allows me to slow down. Some people live in the past. You know, the good old days, and I wish we could go back to those times, and we miss the present. And it reminds me, you know, Mike Ditka, the great football coach of the Chicago Bears, we were doing a clothing drive for the Knights of Columbus here in Chicago, and I was invited to come and, you know, kind of be present for that. And Mike Ditka, he's telling me that he went to all Catholic schools growing up, and one of the nuns taught them in grade school. She said, and it said, I still remember this to this day. The past is history. The future is mystery. This moment is the present. This moment is a gift. That's why they call it the present. And so he said, I try to live my life. You know, the past is history. The future is a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why they call it the present. So just to live in the here and now. And if you watch The Way, I encourage listeners to watch The Way with Martin Sheen. You watch him and the other people on the Camino. Initially, he's just, I can't wait to get to the next destination. And he's just all about business and marching through and just getting each day done. And then by the end of the Camino, they're all going more slowly. They're smelling the roses. They're enjoying the Camino. That's what the Lord invites us to slow down, to not live in the past, not live in the future, but really enjoy the moment, enjoy the person that God places right in front of you today. If we live life that way, it would be a game changer.
Well, Father, we talked last week on the program with Father Scott Pogacnik from St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I talked to him a little bit on Friday about an experience he had walking a smaller portion of the Camino back when he was in seminary in Rome, and you know, talked about the people that you meet along the way and kind of the mix of experience where there'd be times you'd be walking pretty closely together and other times you might be you know, walking 100 feet apart, so you're a little more on your own with an opportunity to kind of think and pray a little bit, and easing away from technology, as you mentioned, a little bit in terms of the cell phone. But talk a little more about maybe some of the people, too, that you'd run into along the way.
Yeah, it was that was a great part of the Camino. Again, we were a group of men that people just kind of came to know us along the way. Oh, that's the Chicago guys, you know. And we would at times be walking as a group, as you say. There were times when everybody would just kind of spread out. Whenever we get to the next town, whoever was leading might slow down and catch up. where we'd be walking alone and reflecting. And then, you know, people would come into our, it's almost like people come into your life, you know, people kind of, they're walking a little faster than we are or slower. One man that really jumps out at me, he was from Germany, 39 years old, husband and father, and he was walking alone. And he wasn't Catholic, and he really didn't have any faith at all. He said, I've been extremely successful in my work. I have a beautiful wife, beautiful children. According to the world, I have everything. But he said, my heart is empty. And so I just started sharing with him, you know, St. Augustine, my heart is restless until it rests in thee. And he just started following us and joining us in everything. And one of the things that we would do every day, of course, I celebrate Mass every day. And if the weather was nice, I would do it outside along the way. We would just find a nice park and a good place for Mass. And we would just kind of pull over and celebrate Mass. Well, he started coming to Mass with us every day just to hear the Word of God, to because he wouldn't receive communion, but he was just intrigued by the whole thing. Some of the guys in our group gave him my YouTube channel, and he'd go every night, he'd go back and watch some of these YouTube videos. He heard about my story, and the next day he would ask me questions, and so we keep in touch now. And so he started reading the Bible now to his children. And, you know, so it's just one of those stories that of the many, many people that we met along the way. And we actually kept a journal of all the different people that we met, a little bit about their story so that we can continue to pray for them. And now with things like WhatsApp, we keep in touch with some of those who've really impacted our lives.
Such a beautiful story, Father Brooke Masters, the Lord literally bringing people into your path, the great story of your journey on the way, doing the Camino here on the Feast of St. James, recounting those tales for us. Father, it's great to have you back. Appreciate that and look forward to many more chats in the future. Lord willing, we continue with Morning Air now here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app after the quick break. Back with Kim Morgan talking about mental health and technology. That's all on the way as we continue here on Morning Air on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I hear babies cry.
Daphne, how are you?
I'm good.
I watch them grow.
You sound good. How old are you, Daphne?
From the very young,
wow, 4 years old,
to the very wise.
Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. Born 2 weeks before the Titanic sunk.
She's 110 years old.
Yes, sir.
That's amazing.
The Family Rosary Across America, 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
If you're young at heart.
Wake up, America. It's Morning Air
with John Morales, Sarah Tafoya, and Glenn Leverett.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today. Happy Monday to you. Glenn and Sarah here. John back. If we can convince him to come back from vacation tomorrow, he's scheduled to come back, and he'll be back joyfully with plenty of tales from the road as well. Great to have him along tomorrow. This hour, still to come, New Story Corner before the hour is through. But right now, checking in with one of our best radio friends, Kim Morgan, a longtime co-host on our Minnesota affiliate, KYES, talking great things on a program called Conversation there. She's joined us through the years on Morning Air as well, a Catholic wife and mom, big, beautiful family, and also a clinical social worker, and that comes to bear a little bit. And Kim going to come in to talk about technology and mental health in just a little bit, too. But sometimes when technology doesn't work, that can be kind of a strain on mental health, can't it, Sarah?
Glenn, you're reading my mind. Yeah, no. I had a little tech issue yesterday. Forgot my password, so my phone is out of commission. I can receive calls and texts, but I can't make any. So yeah, I've been having to kind of adjust my daily life to not being able to have that quick access, the quick draw to the phone, and be able to look something up or quickly call someone or text someone and see what's going on and check the weather, all these calculators, all these things that we're relying on. So I have to know that there's other ways we did all those things in the past. So I'm going back to those normal ways of the ways we did it before. But yeah, sometimes that can be a strain on our mental health.
Well, I don't know if you're quite old enough, probably not, to have the old kitchen phone rotary dial thing welded to the wall. It came with the house in the early 50s, technically owned by the phone company and built so they'd never, ever have to come out and fix it, because those things were indestructible, made in military quality, I think, and at least bomb resistant, perhaps, and with a nice long cord that would stretch all the way down down the hallway to your bedroom. But my goodness. Dialing somebody up to line up kids, to get enough kids together to, you know, play softball or baseball, something like that. That was a lot of dialing with a rotary dial phone. That's all I got to say.
A lot of finger dexterity. Yeah, we did. I never used the rotary in my house, but I used it like on a payphone or something in different locations. We did have a phone that was attached to the wall and with a very long cord, because I remember my mom having conversations on Saturday and she'd be walking through the house with it and, you know, doing all this stuff. It's just funny, the things now with it's wireless. You can go everywhere. You don't even think about like all how you were attached. You could only go so far.
Yeah, we didn't need a password, though, for that kitchen phone either. So, Kim Morgan, did you have a big old rotary dial phone welded to the wall in the house you grew up in?
Hey, we were high tech. We had the push buttons, and it wasn't on the wall. It could sit on the desk, but we had the long cord to where you could pull it and sit in the closet, because then, of course, nobody could hear what you're saying.
Not at all.
Small closet door. But we thought we had privacy to talk to our friends that way. So it was a lot of challenges to try to get those big kickball games together at night, calling everybody and not being able to group text or group me or all those fun technology apps we have now on our phones today.
We had to really want to play with our friends to go to that work, but we did it. We did it, didn't we? And that work, we could get the game done.
That was the hard part. They answered the phone and you had to be polite and know what to say.
Yeah, talking about phone screeners when you call in a radio station, my goodness, parents were phone screeners in real life. We had to learn to get through those. And they never, the parents, when they answered, it was never like, yeah, you're caller 9, you're the winner. But that never happened. It was like, just a minute, we'll see if they're there. No, they can't come out to play. They've been naughty, sorry. But anyway, when we don't have that technology at our fingertips, it gets a little tough. But technology bringing to bear some good uses for mental health, something we're talking about today with Kim Morgan. How has the landscape changed a little bit? I know COVID had a bit to do with doing things, not only those work meetings, good, bad, or indifferent, through Zoom, but also even some mental health counseling and different things have come to bear with some of the new ways we've learned to cope and using technology to help us.
Well, even pre-COVID, we were starting to see a lot of virtual wellness, not just in the mental health arena, but also in our physical health. We could virtual dial in and talk to a physician or an assistant and tell them our symptoms. They could see us face-to-face and recommend a prescription just by seeing us through media, through our phones. So that was a step in the right direction. And then we added in a lot of mental health technology to start having FaceTime type viewing of each other through the mental health counselor and the client that was being seen. But COVID rapidly expanded how we do that and the acceptability of it and the accessibility of it. And that's something really amazing to me, how these apps on our phones just took off for mental health. And it's not all just you and a counselor. There are hundreds and hundreds of apps out there that do mental health type promotion to help you be a better person, to help you plan your day, to help you be more organized, to help you avoid ADHD type symptoms throughout the day, to keep you structured. So it's a technology that has morphed and found its way into our world because there's such a high need for it. And the nice part is, like I said, these apps are not just strictly traditional client and patient relationships where you Zoom with each other, you see each other on a screen, you talk about your struggles. But often many of these are apps that you do on your own. And you think about it, though, we have apps for everything else, movies and games and prayers and how we communicate with each other socially. So why not look at our mental health? In fact, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of apps about physical health that'll keep you motivated, and like from couch to 5K and all these fun things to keep you moving, keep you active. So the idea that we're including mental health in this is not rocket science, but it's something that maybe some of us have forgotten about or didn't know about or didn't think about how much health we can get from clicking on an app and having an app remind us of a few things along our journey every day.
Kim, is the jury still out in how effective some of these, say, long-distance ways of counseling and other technology are working?
It is very, very hard to study that and get reliable results, yes. That's one of the cons to having mental health apps, is that it's hard to see how effective it is. It's hard to guarantee privacy in all respects. It's hard to regulate who's out there doing what, and are they really being helpful. So one does have to approach this with a little bit of caution and maybe some guidance from somebody a little bit more experienced about what apps are better than others and how do you guarantee that I have privacy in this, and who will my data be shared with? And that's an important question too, because if it's an app that's not part of a mental health system, then why are you gathering this information and what are you going to do with it? So we do have to be very careful as we look at some of these apps.
Now, every time there's a mass shooting, of course, you know, it's horrible. And then, you know, we try to figure out it's somebody's fault that this happened in addition to the shooter. Guns are blamed, and, you know, not that there aren't problems with guns. And then also mental health and better access to that. Is, you know, anything we can do to help a little bit? You know, it might not be a panacea that we have electronic access to resources for mental health. And, you know, would someone who is, you know, I guess, bent on a way to want to kill mass people for no good reason would avail themselves of that. But still, the idea that we can make it more accessible, you know, anything that can help a bit can help a bit. Huh?
That's very true. And sometimes you hear that some of these lone shooters have not only left clues or even spoken more freely about it, and no one has done anything, or they have no one to tell. So that in of itself would be a connection that a person really struggling on the edge would have, is they would have a connection with someone that they have gone to before, someone they have talked to, or perhaps maybe even they are logging in for the first time, and it's a good way to help intervene in those situations. Now, am I guaranteeing that, you know, school shootings are going to go down because of this? No, but the idea that on an app, there's a lot more mental health care 24 hours a day. It's much more accessible than waiting your turn to get an appointment in a clinic. The support is there. There's people online that are willing to connect with clients 24/7. And so these kind of things can be helpful in those situations, especially when you're dealing with somebody so socially isolated. And the other important thing in that is that oftentimes we have known symptoms or clues along the way, and we have failed to do anything about it as a community. We don't take it seriously, or we don't think that they'll follow through with it, so we don't do anything. And I think in this app-type setting, there might be the technology behind that to automatically intervene more aggressively and talk to the person about, we're going to get you help, we need you to listen to what we're saying, and try to really connect with the person. And it's in a less threatening way, because through that technology, there's an automatic barrier between you and that person to cushion that and to help that person feel safe in a time where they're very, very vulnerable.
Indeed, can that be a way for people that are, you know, maybe more used to you know, they'd rather text someone than talk to them live on the phone, and they'd rather do that than see someone live in person. Not that that's all the best, but we're kind of edging that way in terms of people, especially if they're, you know, feeling a little socially uncomfortable. Is being able to talk to a mental health professional through a technological distance kind of a way to ease into something and actually make those first steps toward getting help when it's needed?
Well, we do know that there are many, many popular crisis intervention programs now that are using texting. There's a suicide prevention hotline that does texting. There's crisis pregnancy centers that do texting. And these kind of modalities are just adapting to the world around us. It's like we wouldn't handwrite a penciled letter 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we would phone call somebody. And now, where we're at today in technology, we're going to send a text, send an email, log into an app. We're going to do communication in the current environment that we have and using the technology we have. And I think a lot of these intervention centers have done a good job of quickly adapting to how people in the world around us, and I'm not even going to say young people because I think it's young and old alike, enjoy the privacy of texting. They enjoy having that distance. They feel safer. They feel like they can think about their responses and not have to just answer based on what they think somebody wants to hear by looking at their expressions on their face or because they only have 50 minutes in the clinical hour to talk to their person in therapy. But really, they have more time to work on their issues. They have more time to think about their responses, and they have that safety and comfort zone of a little bit of distance. And so, you know, a lot of people would say, well, isn't that negative? Isn't that negative, Kim, because they miss that personal connection? Well, it can be, but not always. And I think we can find great benefits in how we use the technology. And we can also create a safe and comfortable, trusting environment with a client to where maybe if one of their concerns is great social anxiety, great anxiety about leaving their home, fear of what's out there, maybe we can build enough trust to where they are capable then to come in to an in-person therapy session and get more intense help, more continuity of care that way. So we can always take something and make it evil, but we often can take these technology paths and use them as good when it comes to helping people improve and better their mental health status.
Yeah, some baby steps through technology to make good things happen using that superpower for good and not evil. Going to give you a few minutes to, use that app to scroll your social media while we take a quick break on the radio. Back with Kim Morgan and more, talking about technology and mental health, plus a new story corner, all coming up before the hour is through. Stick around. More to come right here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air
on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day.
Making it a good day. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air. Glenn and Sarah, John on the way tomorrow here on Morning Air. On the way after the top of the hour, we'll talk with Kendra Von Esch about how we can be courageous Catholics in a woke world. That's coming up, the story corner on the way as well. We continue our conversation right now with Kim Morgan. We're talking about advances in technology that can help in the field of mental health and some of the great different areas that can help out as well. Hey, I was wondering too, Kim, on a bigger picture, mental health treatment changed, especially for those really struggling, changed already maybe a couple generations ago now, when we got rid of so many of those institutions, which turned out to be very, very scary places. But so often, so many people who really needed some serious help were, you know, basically turned out on their own on the streets and driving some of the homeless troubles we have in parts of the country as well. Yet even many homeless have a phone, can better access to technology even go so far as to help some of those problems?
It certainly can, and sometimes it's as simple as medication reminders set on your phone. Don't forget to take your medicine. Once people establish that routine and start feeling more healthy when they've been in an inpatient setting, they certainly can function out in society if they take their medication. So that's a good way to help someone to start creating new patterns. It sounds very simple, and it doesn't always work, but yes, they are able to be a lot more connected with their therapist, with groups of people that have common struggles. It certainly can help. I know that we still are not doing enough today to help those severely mentally ill, because often they do get to feeling better on their meds, so they quit taking them because they feel fine now. And then it starts a vicious cycle of having their symptoms reoccur, and they can often be a danger to themselves or to others around them. And so pros and cons of long-term inpatient care, that of course some of those hospitals were very scary places to be. Others were put together and rather structured well and kept people safe that were being cared for. So we can do better as far as mental health for the extreme cases, and we haven't gotten there yet. But this could be a step in the right direction, especially when it provides 24-hour service. There's low to no cost for a lot of these things to be connected through technology, and often people can have a lot of anonymity if they find themselves in mental health trouble and they need someone and they don't want to talk directly to their family or friends. This is a good way to connect with somebody who's a professional who can intervene and help them. So the technology is just becoming more and more available to people. And you're right, the irony, the homeless, they have a phone but no home. So good thing they didn't need a wall and a cord to connect it to, I guess, anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. No, in a lighter or easier vein, too, some things that can just help us in a mental health or even mental sharpness way, using apps to help us with anything from journaling to just a better focus.
That's right. There's some incredible mental health games out there that can keep you sharp and keep you active. There are hundreds of apps that allow you to journal each day. Some of them are more open-ended than others. Some of them ask a specific question each day for you to think about or ponder. Many of them will provide affirmations. So you wake up in the morning, you say your morning prayers, then you log into your app, and you have these affirmations that come into your mind that you read, that you can think about, and it's another way to stay on that positive link of mental health to start your day correctly. They have anti-stress apps. They have apps to help you get to sleep. They have apps to help you meditate. They have apps that will keep you in a routine and prompt you at certain times of the day to do certain things. It's just amazing what is out there. And one of the newest ones that I was hearing about this past week was one that will help a person with ADHD, and I know we're changing the terminology of that now a little bit, but I think most listeners would know what I mean symptom-wise when I refer to that. And this app will help them stay focused through the day to complete tasks in their fullness before moving on to the next task, which if you've ever seen, the scattered housewife type thing, we start a load of laundry, we go to make a bed, we come back to start the dinner, then we go back to the laundry, and we look very ADD in our routine sometimes in a home life. This app will help you complete each of those tasks in its fullness, especially if you tend to forget what you were doing 5 minutes before. So there's a nice level of intervention, and of course, this is not even talking about what we talked about at the beginning of the show, where we do have one-to-one services with licensed clinical professionals to work with you either by text or by virtual video of having therapy sessions with that person. So these apps tend to have a broad array of services that they can provide to a person. And the nice part is, if you try one and you don't like it, it's easy to delete it and move on to the next one and try it for a few days. And I think that you can actually do a lot more shopping that will help you be the person you are looking to be. And you can do this in the privacy of your home, and you don't have to spend money to do it.
From the professional or the counselor side of this, obviously they can see more people more, more effectively or, more productively if they can include online visits as well as in-person visits. But are professionals feeling that the new technology can still be as effective when it comes down to the literal treatment of people?
Yeah, I think it's still so new. We're looking to see where that effectiveness is at. And I think it only works in so much as the person wants to put in the energy and the effort and the consistency they need to put into it, which is true whether you're in a traditional mental health setting or not. If we have a one-to-one session, Glenn, and then I send you out to do, quote, homework or to do something to change in your routine during the week, if you don't do that, you don't get better. It's kind of like if you don't do the push-ups, you're not going to get stronger. So the same applies to this. It only works in so much as you work within the program to be successful. So, and the accountability is a little bit lacking, right? The app's not going to nag you. It might send a little chime reminder of something, but it's not really going to say, look you in the eye and say to you, what prevented you from taking that step this week? What prevented you from doing that so that you could come back and talk about how it felt? And I think when a therapist sees a person one-to-one, there really is that advantage of being able to hold somebody accountable, show that you have compassion for that person, and help them to find the next step, the new way, the better way to achieve a goal. And you can do that through more traditional counseling versus the apps will not push you like that. So, again, advantages and disadvantages to traditional therapy versus this. Now, the compromise, of course, is video therapy, which, again, therapists can see a lot more people. All that time it took us to drive to the clinic and come home from the clinic, we can squeeze in 2, 3, 4 more people in our day sometimes by doing video consulting. The struggle with that, too, is a guarantee of privacy. If we're working from our home, we have families coming in and out, how does the client feel safe if one day somebody accidentally pops into the clinician's home office and then they feel like they've been left vulnerable because someone's seen them on the screen or heard what they were saying? So we do have to balance all this out, that sometimes there's a lot of advantages. You can see more people. It costs less. You have a little bit of distance to help you feel safe and secure, but yet the vulnerability level could be a little bit higher in those situations as well.
And just a minute left, Kim, as we talk about the role of technology in mental health today and some of those developments before and since COVID as well. Does it help just in general, since we have these new superpowers, the more communication when we're dealing with mental health issues, the better generally?
I think it's always good for people to stay connected. The more people involved in a person's life, the more there are people that know what's going on from different angles. I think we can all agree we call certain friends or family members to discuss certain topics, and the more from an everyday healthy person's life we see that that is valuable and important, the more we can also say that that's also valuable, important, and someone struggling in a mental health crisis to have many people involved, many approaches to working with their mental health. So not only would a person maybe have telehealth for counseling on a screen once a week, but maybe they also are listening to these affirmations once a day, they're journaling on an app once a day, they are using anti-stress techniques with a different app. So you have kind of, again, this wraparound service approach that we talked about in the early 1980s of creating a community around people to help them be successful. And we all do better when we are in community, whether it's a community that we pray together with, a community that we receive mental health service or educational services, or our community as family. All these are very important structures to have in place in our lives. And a lot of those structures, especially families, can be wounded through our struggles that we have in mental health. And it takes a lot of reparation to heal some of those wounds. And I think these type of approaches can help us to be healthier people all around, whether we struggle with mental health or whether we're just trying to improve our everyday lives, these apps
Thank
are
you so
out
much, Kim. We are out of time for today, but we appreciate Kim Morgan, licensed independent clinical social worker, joining us today from St. Louis. Time now for a listen to today's Story Corner. Our story today called He Made a Restaurant Cry by Brad Esposito. 5-year-old Josiah Duncan and his mom were dining at a local Waffle House when Josiah noticed a man sitting by himself in one of the booths not being served. Josiah's mother told him the man was homeless, which prompted him to hand the man a menu and tell him to order whatever he wanted. Nobody really waited on him, so Josiah jumped up and asked if he needed a menu because can't order without one. Speaking to WFA 12 News, Josiah's mother, Ava, talked about her son's hard time in understanding what homeless meant. I told him, he's homeless. What does that mean? Josiah responded, and I said, well, that means he doesn't have a home. The homeless man originally ordered a hamburger, but ended up getting the lot, including plenty of bacon, after Josiah pressed him and insisted his mother would get him whatever he wanted. He didn't have any food, said Josiah, but Josiah wouldn't let him start till he said a blessing with him. I wanted to say the blessing with him. Now, the whole restaurant, understandably, very emotional. His mom says, the man cried, I cried, everybody cried. Speaking to WFA News after the event, Ava spoke of the pride that she had in her son. Watching my son touch the 11 people in that Waffle House tonight will forever be one of the greatest accomplishments as a parent I'll ever get to witness. From Philippians 2:3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. That's our Story Corner for today. More of Morning Air coming up right around the corner. We'll talk with Kendra Von Esch about being a solid Catholic in a woke world. That's as Morning Air continues on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.